the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. I am here today with Libby Halevi, and I hope to God that we're doing this correctly because the last time I messed it up, but I actually upgraded my software, so thank you, Libby, for joining me.
My pleasure to be with you, Lonnie.
Well, I really appreciate you coming back. I appreciate all the work that you do. You were talking to me about where you're going to be. Libby Halevi, for those of you who are not 100% familiar with her, I'll help you get up to speed pretty quickly. She is the host and creator of Nuclear Hot Seat, and it is really, honestly, one of the place, really, to get nuclear news anywhere in the so-called alternative, because she reaches out to scientists, people doing the work. She reaches out to activists who are on the boots, the health physicists who are considering this. Your work is really phenomenal, Libby, I have to say. I truly appreciate it. I look forward to it every week when you produce it. So thank you.
Thank you, Lonnie. It's good to know that people listen and listen with continuity and get the fact that I care as much as I do and put in the effort that I do, because I really want to be an ongoing source for solid information, journalistically grounded information, and stay away from any kind of overstatement. It's bad enough we don't have to catastrophize it. It's enough of a catastrophe by itself.
See, I get what you're saying about the overstatement, because I'm with you on that. To be honest, I tend to get hysterical and overstate it myself. Like, I'm really bad with the numbers. Anybody who listens to this radio show knows that my statistics are almost always off. The general idea is correct, but the numbers are off, right? So, like, if you hear me tell you the half-life, I think that plutonium has a half-life of 63,500 years, but that could be wrong. There's numbers floating all in my head, all these isotopes. They have all these half-lives. From anywhere
plutonium
from
actually
to 100,000 years, you know?
Yeah, no, plutonium is actually 24,000 years
that's
for the half-life.
24,000, that's right.
But it takes 20 half-life cycles for it to go flat, so you just multiply it by 20 and you get 480,000 years before plutonium is no longer a danger.
Gee.
You know, any moment now, any
this
moment.
This is the thing. This is why you and I are probably sick to death about talking about the statistics about Fukushima radiation, all this stuff. I personally am really sick. Who did I say this to? Maybe it was Carl Grossman when we were on the radio. I said, you know what? I actually am sick of us talking about, like, the statistics, how much like, this stuff is a danger. We need our government to take the threat to our planet seriously. We do not have the science to keep creating more nuclear waste, period. You know, I get it. It's a great science, but we're not ready to use it. This is what Dr. Goffman said originally. we're not ready to use it. We've been living with alternative facts for 70 years. Is it any wonder that we now have a president that's insisting on giving us alternative facts and slandering anybody he wants? I mean, these people are murdering our... John Goffman in this book, Irreverie, can you see that? This is the book by... Have you read this?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man. I'm going to steal your phrase, nuke resistors. I love that phrase, by the way. Thank you. But in this book, he has a section about the anxiety that it's causing us anxiety as consumers to know we have to participate to turn this light bulb on. We participate in nuclear energy, which we know is killing people. Right? Because mm-hmm. we know that for every two, they've scientifically, on the NRC website, it says that every two rads in the air for a population of 1 million people, we know we're going to get 32,000 cancers, over 200 birth defects, period. That's the statistic, excuse me. You know what I mean? So you have been doing this longer than I have. You've been affected by Three Mile Island. Your life dramatically changed that weekend, those 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was a total change physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally. I stopped living the life that I had been up till that time, which was fairly confident, if not cocksure, about my place in the world. Certain that I was going to make a marvelous difference, have a fabulous career, and that nothing could touch me, nothing could harm me. You know, it's kind of like that bulletproof thing that younger people tend to have about themselves. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't that young at the time. I was in my late 20s, but I still had that kind of an attitude. And to be someplace where suddenly I was nailed. I couldn't talk my way out of it. I couldn't reason my way out of it. I couldn't argue my way out of it. I couldn't beg or plead my way out of it. Whatever was coming at me from that nuclear reactor, and we never found out how much radiation leaked because the monitors that they had there didn't work. And I always thought, oh, they came from the lowest bidder. So, you know, it was like a thermostat that didn't work. It wasn't until several years into working on Nuclear Hot Seat that I learned that the reason that those monitors didn't work, and we don't know how much radiation was released, was that the radiation levels were so high, they fried the equipment. It exceeded design basis early on.
What was the design basis? Oh, my God.
You know, and again, I'm not one who retains the numbers.
Did you
it's the shape
out
of it.
At all during that period?
Yeah. The first day, I was staying with friends who happened to live just a mile away. Now, I'm not from the area. I was visiting. I was visiting a friend who, by weird confluence of the universe, or God's sense of humor, we never know which this is, had just moved there 3 months earlier with her husband of 6 months, who had gotten a job at the Harrisburg Airport. So they moved to Middletown, Pennsylvania. And that's where I went to see her. I was going through some stuff. I wanted to see my old girlfriend. And they lived a medialist life. You know, they didn't have a television set. They had a radio they turned on for classical music occasionally.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like we were tied in with all of that. And I was there. I was working on a writing project, interestingly enough, a musical called Armageddon. And towards the evening, I went running across to a store across the street. It was like a 7-Eleven kind of a thing to get a little bit of a snack. And while I was there, I overheard some people talking about what was happening at the N plant. And I went, excuse me, is there a problem somewhere? And they said, yeah, the problem at Three Mile Island. I said, well, where's that? And they said, you're not from around here, are you? And I said, no. And they said, and the guy literally lifted his hand, pointed, and he said, it's about a mile that way.
Oh my
you can
God.
See the He said, you can see the cooling towers from the playground. And the playground was adjacent to this little 7-Eleven. And I went, oh, and I went walking out and I looked and there they were. Now, I'd never even noticed them before because we don't tend to notice things in our environment unless there's a reason. But there it was right there. Now, I only had the little snippets of information that I overheard. So when I got home, my friends came and she said, oh, well, people are, you know, freaking out about it, but I don't think it's really that bad. And it's probably just a media hype kind of a thing. And her husband came back and said, well, they think they've got it calmed down, you know, and he was a little bit more dubious, but okay. They started getting phone calls, people saying, get out while you can. And them saying, nah, it's not that bad. It's just media hype. So that was the first day. The second day, they went off to work. I didn't have any transportation, but I was staying with them a little over a mile and a half away from Middletown. And I went, okay, I'm a freelance writer. Let's see if I can get the story on this big media hype. So in this beautiful Pennsylvania springtime air, I'm out there walking, breathing deeply. Oh my, you know, it's spring and everything is starting to, you know, smell the aroma from the earth, you know, as it thaws, and just going, wow, what a great day. What a beautiful day. And I go traipsing around Middletown doing interviews with people. Then I wait 40 minutes on a bus stop on a corner to catch a bus into Harrisburg to see my friend. And then after we've had dinner and we polish off a carafe of wine, we take the bus back in and we walk back to the home through this area. I didn't know that was a day that there was a plume of radiation that was released. This, wow, again, is something that I found out only about 2 years ago through that area. So what was I exposed to? I don't know. And then the third day, they were at work. I was in the house typing up on this musical theater project that I was working on, and that's when the announcement came down the road. And I was upstairs in the back, so all I could hear was that there was some kind of announcement downstairs. So I went running downstairs, pulled open the door in order to hear them say, keep your doors and windows closed. Do not go outside unless you absolutely have to.
Wow.
Slammed the door. I didn't have any windows open, but I slammed the door. And everything I knew about radiation, I'd learned during the 50s, because that's when I was in school. It was the Cold War. Radiation was bad because it was going to come from the Russians and it was going to come from a blast. So they told us a lot of true stuff, mm-hmm, about it. And I knew that I didn't want to be exposed to radiation, but there was nothing in the house to stop radiation. The house didn't have a basement in which to hide from the radiation, because that was always the last step that one was going to take. And so I went pretty much to the edge of madness and beyond, because I was trapped. I had no transportation, nowhere to hide, didn't know how much. And it was completely out of my control. There was nothing I could do one way or the other. Oh, and the phones were jammed. The phones, they were so overloaded that one couldn't get a line.
In this box by yourself and couldn't go anywhere and had no ways, means of communication. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And didn't know anybody.
Now, after that event happened, did you have any side effects or illnesses? Did you get the flu? Did you have ear, nosebleeds or anything like that?
Nosebleeds, no. I've tried to remember if I had a metallic taste in my mouth. That's a maybe. But under the stress, and that's what people don't understand, you know, especially the nuclear industry side tries to say, you're just being emotional. Emotions are real. Yeah. And emotions do damage to our body. Yeah. Basically, that kicked me into a level of unrelenting stress that took years to go away.
Right.
And never went away completely, because the damage was already done to my adrenal glands, and they went downhill until about 5 years ago. I found out what was wrong with me and found some holistic ways of building them back up. So I have at least a better life now. But it was that. It was being haunted. It was not knowing how much radiation I had been exposed to. I mean, my friends got to me and we evacuated that third day 150 miles away. And at that point, we watched television and found out what we'd been exposed to. And, you know, it's kind of like a portion of my brains just exploded out of my ears with all of that. And all I could do to pull myself together was write on what turned out to be a separate musical about human emotions and the need for communication if love is to survive, because I didn't know how much more time I had left
on
Earth.
Would you say that again? That is awesome. Say that again. What's it about?
The show is called Kazoo. I was working on a show that ended up being called Armageddon. That was a political satire. But suddenly I was living a political satire, except it wasn't funny.
Right.
It was life-threatening.
Right.
And after I saw that CBS News special with Walter Cronkite, you can find it on YouTube. You can find big chunks of it on YouTube. I woke up the following morning and there was a song in my head, complete words, music, lyrics, everything. And I wrote it down, and it was, in my mind, a father's song to his daughter saying, I'm scared too. You know, that there are all these things, you think I'm big and powerful, but I'm scared too. And I looked at it and I went, what a great song. But that doesn't fit with the show I've been writing. But I don't want to write the show I was writing. I want to write whatever this show is. And what that grew into was a musical called Kazoo. And Kazoo takes place in an amusement park where all the rides are emotional confrontations. And it's what happens when a dysfunctional family of four goes to spend the day and first get enticed into revealing their deepest unfulfilled need or fantasy, and then have that need or fantasy fulfilled by the manipulations of the park, but they don't realize that there's a price to pay. And that is that if they stay in Kazoo past this big ceremony called Festival, which takes place at sundown, they will be trapped there forever, turned into park characters. You know, like Disneyland has park characters. They will be park characters who will have their song and dance. They will entertain. They will do the manipulations. But they will never be able to speak their truth again.
Oh, wow.
So ultimately, the show is about the need for honest communication if love is to survive.
Wow, that's
and
awesome.
That, for me, was something that I could devote whatever was left of my life to. Thank you.
We should put that on, man. Where have you put the show on?
We workshopped it a couple of times, and unfortunately, the composer that I was working with had other aspirations in other directions than a girlfriend who didn't like anything that wasn't automatically cheap and commercial. So he dropped out. At this point, he and I have separated on it, and the book and lyrics exist. I need a composer on it who is familiar with Broadway styles, but also is familiar with modern styles as well.
So it's not a play. It's a Broadway play. It's like a musical.
It was always intended as a Broadway show with the ability to scale it down for like a high school production.
Uh-huh.
And it deals with all the different things that people have in their lives
that
they don't talk about.
Being at the university at the theater here, you know?
I would love it. At this point, because my composer and I have split on it, it's a legal split, book and lyrics are mine, and this one piece of music is mine, and then the rest of it has to be composed. But it needs somebody who is sharp to musical theater form and at the same time has facility with hip-hop and rap and
modern. Have you gone to any universities? I mean, I know this is an aside from the interview. I apologize for this, but it's just, we'll talk. Because I think you should take that to the universities. You know what I mean? That would be a good way if you connected to sort of infiltrate the university art department to let people know about the urgency for young students to get engaged in stopping nuclear. I love that term, by the way. Thank you for... Where did you hear that, nuke resistors?
I think that's actually a group where I saw them listed somewhere. And
yeah, I love
and
that.
And it stuck.
I think it's great because we have the water protectors and nuke resistors. I mean, we're in an age of resistance. Like, we have got to stop them. We haven't stopped them. See, this is kind of my... I don't know. It's my discomfort. I'm not angry about it. I'm frustrated. I'm a results person. I mean, how many more tests do we need before? How many people have to die before we recognize that nuclear and the coal? These anti-coal people, right? They think that we need to hang on to nuclear for a while. I think we should marry the two. They could go together. You know, like Carl Grossman says, there's plenty of alternatives.
Well, Harvey Wasserman talks about King Kong, which is coal, oil, nuclear, and gas,
yes.
C-O-N-G. And those all have to go, and it will take top-down intention. We ain't going to get it from this administration. And I'm looking at how many programs are being gutted at this point, and realizing that they are into genocide of anyone who isn't the 1%. That this is about taking food away from hungry people and medication and medical services away from ill people. trying to make all those things that might make our lives better, like natural healing, illegal. I mean, there are places where you cannot even harvest the rainwater from your own roof because it's illegal to hold on to it. What is this about except genocide?
Well,
against anybody who isn't them.
Yeah, well, it is about the it is about the very, very, very elite. It's that, what do they call it? It's not an industrial military complex. It's kind of like a, it's like a banking military cabal. I mean, it's like all mixed up. It's all about the NSA. There's, you know, like this whole thing. I think we need to lean on our elected officials to break free of them. I mean,
I think that our elected officials are for the most part co-opted. I think.
You want to know what? Your reception is like dodgy.
Really?
Yes. Okay.
Now that's an airplane going overhead.
I'm going to hang up and call you right back, okay?
I'll be here.
Okay. You go. That's way, way better. So I can just splice those two together. We have 37 minutes left. We'll pick it up from here.
I'm sure it won't be a problem. We obviously can talk for hours with each other.
Yes. Well, this is the thing. I call this, you know what? I actually really believe that he is Nixon 2.0 installed by the same people, the same set of oligarchs, because, with Nixon, the CIA installed a fake military coup and installed Pinochet. They found Pinochet. They funded the military. They bought the newspaper. They created that fake military coup. They gave them the helicopters. It wasn't the military taking over. It was a fake coup to install these neoliberal ideas of gutting the government, privatizing everything. And then, it's just sort of reestablishing the oligarch. That's the neoliberal agenda, right? But with Trump, they didn't have a fake military coup. What they've had is a fake election. Because we do have, this is why they were wiretapping Mike Flynn. This is what's going to come out. I'll bet you 2-1 that the Russians helped the DNC figure out how to steal the primary from Bernie. Because we know they did that. There is a lot of evidence. And then they got hacked. The DNC got hacked by the Russians. So I think it's all dirty. This is why they're not talking about it. But with this guy talking about what's going on with Obama making all these false accusations, hopefully, I'm hoping that will be enough for the Republicans to come to their senses and say, you know, enough is enough of this insanity. He's demeaning the office of the presidency.
I think that has nothing to do with it, that nothing that you or I would look at as being logical and making sense is going to be in place. I think that right now what is going on is an intentional bombardment with untruths so that people are triggered in their unsolved, unresolved issues about abuse. This is what gaslighting is about. I just read a great article.
You know what? That's true. You know, I said that yesterday to Carl Grossman. I said, you know what? This is weird. I feel like my childhood of surviving childhood abuse prepared me for this. Like, I mean, to be honest, it sort of makes me angry. I thought I was done with this type of behavior. You know what I mean?
I also had abuse when I was in childhood and spent a lot of my years not only healing from it, but being an activist from it, too.
You're a kid, this is the interesting thing. You know, when you're a kid and you realize there's nobody coming for you, your target date is when you're 18. That's how you know you can get out.
Different situation for me. I won't go into it, but there's something I was going for there. Let's edit this part out. Let me just get my thoughts together on it, because there was something really good. I think that these times are made for those of us who have not only been abused, but have dealt with the issues, found healing, and found resolution to a certain point. Because we're the only people who can look at this, see it for what it is, and then report on it.
Amen to that. Maybe you're right.
You know, People, you know, let me do this because I also have a master's degree in spiritual psychology. I mean, my entire life has been dealing with psychological edgy places. That's what my theater has been about, too, because we have to make our propaganda more astute and more compelling than their propaganda. And the only place left to do that is through entertainment. So I've put a lot of energy into that through the years, and I continue to do so. But with what's going on with this gaslighting, it is the same that any child who has ever been abused and then told by their abuser, well, that's not so bad. That didn't hurt. You're not going to tell anybody. If you tell anybody, it'll tear the family apart and it'll all be your fault. It's that manipulation of reality and the perception of reality that's going on. And people who haven't dealt with this are reacting to these things one at a time and going, well, the Republicans are going to wake up from this one, or, well, they've got to take a step on that, and we're going to impeach. You can't impeach if you don't have Congress with you. And you're not going to get these people because they're all in the loop. They're in the loop of money. They're in the loop of gerrymandering. They are the beneficiaries of the cross-check program, which took minority voters off the voting rolls. Greg Palast has huge chunks of information about that. That because of that, there are people who are running into the kind of walls that we used to run into before we realized we were abused and got the healing that we needed from the abuse. And we're the ones who can look at what's happening and not be caught up with it, but step back and look at the patterns. And that's what I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily know every jot and tittle of what's going on, but I look back and go, they have on the agenda stopping programs that feed people. People are going to starve. People are going to get ill. People are going to die from lack of medical services. It's happening already. And the thing about Trump in a photo op with Angela Merkel, not shaking her hand.
Wow, was that disrespectful?
Really rude. No, it was more than that. It was completely intentional. It's a woman. It's a woman.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
He doesn't care. And I saw something that really shocked me, and then I went, you know, it's probably true, which, you know, as somebody from a Jewish background, this is really a shock, but that Angela Merkel is now the leader of the free world.
That's right. She is. That is
she is.
True.
And my jaw dropped over that because we have slipped so far, so fast. And what it is a consolidation of all the pieces that have been put in place since Rush Limbaugh opened his ugly little mouth way back when and got picked up by all the ugly people who then promoted him and all the other agendas that went with it and then turned into Fox and then turned into all the rest of it. The manipulation, the programming, the planning has been there. This is intentional manipulation. And it's like when people start following an intentional trail, just drop another piece of quote-unquote reality television nonsense, tabloid nonsense out there for everybody to go wah about, and then nothing happens on the primary thing that we need to be looking at. And I have to say that the media, which I am a trained member of, my first degree was in broadcast journalism. I've worked for some pretty big stations, and I'm also a member of a professional journalism organization right now that has me so disappointed and so drop-jawed over how out of touch they are with what's going on online. They think we're crazy. I think they're completely out of touch because they think that we aren't, that what we need to do is communicate better with them so that they get the story, as opposed to the story's right there in front of you. Why don't you see it? And they think we're crazy when we say the media is biased and that there are forces that are keeping stories off the air when they are people who are losing their jobs and are being held in smaller and smaller boxes by the economics of journalism. They can't do what they used to do because there's no money available for them to do it. And it's only getting progressively worse.
Well, there's no money because our country is based on war. I mean, we are not going to make any headway with getting our liberty back until I really think that we really 100% need to pull back and demand our Congress start setting limits for the CIA. This business of the CIA owns bombs. I mean, the CIA, they just gave the CIA authority to drop bombs from their own drones. They don't have to tell us who they killed. They don't have to tell us how many people they killed. They don't have to tell us where they did it, which means They are 100% unaccountable. We are funding a terrorist group. How do we know we're not? Do you get what I'm saying? They may or may not be doing good. So far, it doesn't look like they're doing good.
I think that somewhere along the line, and Trump is the embodiment of it with his puppet master, Steve Bannon, behind him. We're the evil empire. You know, we are the bad guys on this planet right now. Yeah. Not the people. I think we've got really good people here.
Yeah.
I think we've got really kind, caring, compassionate human beings. But we haven't organized to defend our liberty the way the other side has organized to take it from us. And at this point, we are at a real disadvantage. We haven't seen even a fraction of the worst that is capable of coming down. I mean, I had somebody the other day say to me, well, how bad can it get? Oh, darling, you never want to ask that question.
Okay, you know how bad it will get. Let's watch them take away Meals for Wheels. We're going to start seeing people starving to death in their homes again. He's already allowed them to start polluting. Give us 1 year of them with no regulations, and let's see how many communities around this country have oil spills and just have catastrophic events going on.
Oh, well, it's happening already. It's happening already. But there's no responsibility. There's no accountability.
That's right.
By taking away all these regulatory bodies and pushing all the regulations back to the Stone Age, it's like taking parental supervision away from a bunch of unruly, untrained, over-testosterone brats and letting them
murderers.
Make as
Let's
big...
Let's be clear. They're murderers. They are perpetrating murder. And this is the thing. This is why we have the regulations. And frankly, the fact that we have had the Price-Anderson Act, that nobody is accountable. In fact, this goes very similar to that idea about those women, the scandal about how the soldiers were taking pictures of other soldiers and they have this website. I was watching the hearing. They have known about this since 2013. There has been nobody fired, nobody demoted, nobody gone to court. There's been no convictions, no indictments. Nothing has happened since 2013. And what they wanted to do was, we're going to train and educate people, but, oh, it's still going on. It speaks to the disregard for human life and disrespect for women.
Women.
I mean, we were talking about Merkley, you know, how Merkel, how he refused to. I mean, he was so completely outright rude to her. It was unbelievable. I mean, that is no
but
way
that's
for a head of state to
but
act.
But that's the message. You see, I believe that there is a matrix out there that doesn't acknowledge states, that doesn't acknowledge countries, that doesn't acknowledge the sovereignty of other nations to make their own choices for themselves. They want complete and utter power, complete and utter subjugation, and they will do the worst that they possibly can on every level, not only to destroy those they consider to be lesser than them for whatever reason, but also because, well, I don't know that I want to go there. Okay, let me get into this one because I haven't been able to talk about it anywhere. As I said, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and did a lot of healing on it. And during my healing time, one of the things I did for a year was I worked as a volunteer on the National Child Abuse Hotline. And we did a lot of work and orientation. It's funny, the first orientation was about satanic and ritualistic abuse of children. There were a whole group of volunteers who were there in the training. The second training, I was the only volunteer who showed up.
Wow.
And they said they do that intentionally because they deal with very serious information there. So we were privy to a lot of this. And when we talk about pedophile ring, no, we're talking about the reality of the fact that they will accuse others of what they're guilty of. It's called projection. And it's also called covering their tracks, because if you say you did something that, well, she did something over there, it's like two little kids. It's like two brothers saying, well, that one, no, that one. But I believe that pedophilia, I believe that what passes for ritualistic and satanic abuse, which does exist. We were trained in what the signs were of this and how this was done. And I also know survivors of it, because these are people I got to know just through the work that I was doing, that because of the severity of what gets done, it has nothing to do with, ooh, we believe in the devil. It's that they want something that is so horrifically beyond the pale of what is considered to be normal human behavior that it's the emotional jump that they get from being so transgressive that is, first of all, addictive. And as long as they can get it on video, audio, and every form of recording possible, it's the ultimate blackmail. There are circles of people who are into this kind of abuse and child pornography and all the rest that are known by people who are trying to take down these rings. And when the attempt has come to cross that line and actually infiltrate the group, it's impossible to do. Because the way to pass the hazing, the ritualistic joining, is that you have to kill an infant on camera.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my
you have
God.
To, if not an infant, then a child. And it is videotaped.
Oh,
and this
God.
Is hell, and this is what it takes. You have to be willing to do
there
something that horrific.
That. So this is what I've heard about these things. I mean, I can tell you what, as a survivor of child abuse, I can tell you that the services, the child services people, they're not fazed by much. Like, they really tolerate a lot in households.
They have to, because they are so overstressed, they are so underfunded, which I think is also intentional,
yeah,
because they don't want the kids getting
healthy and happy and having a happy life. They want them to feel gaslit and subjected and fearful because they're easy to manipulate. Got you.
I want them destroyed,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And because a destroyed
now,
population.
Wait,
is
now, how is it that we have developed this as part of our culture and we tolerate it, Levy? Like, exactly how I view Trump. I think Trump is a serious abuser. I mean, I've said that
oh,
on
yeah.
the show many times.
Question about it.
I mean, he, you can...
Have you gone into the Jeffrey Epstein connection with him?
Yes. Well, I have not. Okay. You are free to disclose it, because I've referenced it a few times, but explain. I'm not the only person
okay.
that's heard about
Jeffrey
this.
Jeffrey Epstein is a billionaire convicted sexual offender. He is, and he went to jail for it. I'm sure it was like a pretty cushy jail that he went to, but he has a jet. I don't know if it's a 707. I mean, it's like a full size jet plane. That's his private plane. That's referred to as the Lolita Express. And one of the things he specializes in is giving political figures and major celebrities free rides on this plane. And also, there are other things that are more sexual that happen at other times on the plane. At least that is what has been reported. He also has a private island in the Caribbean, which is referred to by some as Sex Slave Island. And, you know, that's a place where anything goes, and it has gone. Trump has been his guest numerous times. So was Bill Clinton, at least on the Lolita Express, and at least once on the island. Andrew
Cuomo. They were seen together. Bill Clinton and Trump were seen together with two child prostitutes on the Lolita Express with Epstein. It is very well known. That's why this is because of that one visit with Clinton and Trump together on that plane. That is the reason that the Democratic Party will not go after him about it, because they do not want to destroy the Clintons. That is the fact. It is. This was widely talked about in Europe. It was on the newspapers. It was. This mm-hmm. was, and it wasn't rumor. I mean, that guy got convicted.
No, there. I saw. I pulled a lot of articles myself at that time.
I mean, this is the thing. It is a culture of abuse. It's like our military with this thing. I actually think every single male in our country ought to watch that documentary called Tough Guys, G-U-I-S-E. I think it helps men understand why they're hypermasculine, why they don't respect women. They're naturally responding to how they've been prepared to treat women in our culture. And I think it's very important for us to rearrange our thoughts And as you said, do a lot of spiritual healing. We can heal ourselves. That is like the little benefit of what's gone on with Fukushima, is it's kind of forced us to have a little wake-up call. We've all had to have a little come-to-Jesus talk with ourselves about what's real and what's not real with our lives, because we are in a situation where we're completely out of control with Fukushima. They have no clue what to do. And so the governments, instead of getting together and deciding they're going to put their forces together to figure out a way to stop this thing, they're just going to let it go so they can kill enough people. They're just like, perfect. We'll just get rid of 2/3 of the world's population. A lot faster than we were planning.
The problem that they haven't taken into account is the law of unintended consequences. And that is that they think that they are immune to the consequences of their actions. And they're not. Excuse me.
Well, they think that they're immune to their God. They don't. This is the thing. They are so oblivious. They think their money is. I have actually heard, and I do not. I haven't verified any of this, but I've heard that they are building sites around to circle the planet. There's like stations, and then they're burrowing deep down into the ground, and they plan on having a very limited elite kind of little resort because they know that the planet. I mean, Libby, I heard a physicist, an astrophysicist on television talking to some students in St. Louis saying, "We know that the way to save the human race is to get us off this planet."
Quite frankly, if I were the rest of the planets, I would say, no, you guys are going to have to sit there and you can't go out and play until you clean up the mess in your room.
I mean, the arrogance of this is like, really? And they're just giving up on remediating the Earth. And my goal, this is why I take up this mantle of doing this radio show every day. Because my goal is to change the energy. I believe our thoughts are things. If we put it out there that we can find solutions, we are going to. And I agree with Thomas Ackerman about art being the opening. We had this conversation yesterday, and he said, you know, all great artists identified their time. And guess what? We are in the age of fission. This is it. And it is true. And if we can build an art movement around that and get people like your play, Kazoo sounds awesome at a fundamental core. That is the core message people need to hear. We need to be authentic if we are going to allow love to reign true and be, you know, we need to release the fear of being authentic and facing these facts.
We also have to realize that we have the power of our thought to create a different reality. That's the other show that split at Three Mile Island, the Armageddon show. I actually am going back into that one and doing some updates, but it is about the power to visualize another reality, no matter how bad the one we are seems to be, and that by changing our intentions and our perspective and putting energy into it, we can change things for the better. It's about gaining the connectedness, getting the people together and actually taking action in a concentrated way. And I agree with Thomas Ackerman. I think art is the way to lead because politics is so corrupted. But art, if it is done correctly and with passion and with clarity and with skill, can cut through all of the resistance and get to someone's heart. And once you get there, you have the potential to then move them. One of the things I aim to do with my art, and one piece of my art is Nuclear Hot Seat. I do everything I can to make it persuasive or funny, and there's a structure to it, and there are all kinds of things that I have worked in with it over the, by the way, I'm coming up on my 300th episode in a week from this Tuesday.
Congratulations. Well, duly noted on the structure and your effort, and you are quite hilarious. I mean, I have to say, the duck, quack, quack, like that's
some people just hate that and they berate me for it, but I'm sorry, I have to have my fun.
Sometimes I'll be driving and I'm like, Numb Nuts of the Week, like just sort of like make that little. I was in the car and I did that one time, and my friend's like, "Where'd that come from?" I'm like, "I don't know. I was just thinking." It's like that little harmony. It's like the Jiffy commercials, you know, that I used to, when you were a kid, you'd copy the commercials. Bravo on your show, Nuclear Hot Seat. To all of our listeners who have not gone to her website, it's nuclearhotseat.org, right?
No. .com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And she does rely on donations to keep her production up, so please feel free to be generous with her show and with this show. Our station also is a burgeoning new radio show. And by the way, I really do appreciate it when people share our radio station and share my show with people so that we can engage more and more people. And the venue of this show now has transformed to 5 days a week so that we can speak to a lot more people like Libby, which your story about your experience at Three Mile Island was astounding. You know, we sort of got sidetracked on this, but I want to go back to this. After your initial exposure and you guys got miles away and your life went on, did you, other than, you know, you've shared that experience that you chose not to have kids because you were afraid of what you would do, but did you have any physical illnesses or anything like that that went on that you thought might have been caused by it?
Well, physical, the adrenal, but here's where realizing that the stress set me up for post-traumatic stress, and we didn't even know the term back then.
Right.
But I was in post-traumatic stress to the point where I was so dissociated that it was a year and a half later that I was in another stressful situation. It was not anywhere near as cataclysmic. It was like a more of a chosen thing. I suddenly found myself with some people and we were rock climbing when I wasn't prepared for rock climbing. There was no safety equipment and I had to go down a 3-story cliff. But there was that and some other things that happened. And all of a sudden, it was like a bubble burst inside of me. And I realized that on some deep psychological level, I had so dissociated under the stress of Three Mile Island that it was like I was imagining my life. You know how they say that when you die, you have a flash, you're supposed to have a flashback and you see your entire life? Mm-hmm. It was like I had a flash forward that I actually died in a nuclear explosion there, and I was imagining my life forward. And on some level, this was a protective mechanism that I created for myself to be able to move forward through the days because the terror was so unrelenting. And it was only when I was on the other side of the world in the middle of this extremely stressful day with all kinds of inputs when all of a sudden that bubble popped and I realized that what I'd been holding in check was all of that terror and I really was alive. It's like it took me a year and a half to connect with the fact that I was alive. And when this happened, it was like my body tingled. I could feel muscles releasing all
because
over my face. I was shaking.
That whole time you were sort of waiting for the axe to drop, something catastrophic to happen.
Because on that level of consciousness, something catastrophic had already happened, and I was just imagining everything that was in my life. So nothing had any consequence.
Yeah.
And I was way out of control. I mean, I drank to excess. I took big chances with my life. I did all kinds of crazy things. And, you know, because, like, what difference does it make? Like, somebody goes through a big trauma and then they start acting crazy. That's what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I just hid it from people because I didn't want to be judged by it. And I didn't want anybody getting in the way of my craziness.
So, Libby, you were not actually an activist the whole long time, right? You only came back to this after Fukushima, correct?
That's correct. I did try for a short time in Los Angeles when I first got back after Three Mile Island. I went to the offices of the Alliance for Survival, but it was like they had their own agenda and they didn't want to hear what was going on with me. So I ended up stuffing envelopes. They had a big concert.
I know this story. Look, this is the issue. This is my thing. Like, we've got to figure out a way to get this into really where it's more open, where we join forces, really join forces and help. I mean, I think it's enough. Enough is already with this nuclear lies. And for them to say, you know, they cannot hold, it does not hold up fire anymore. There's just been too much in the last 10 years that says it has to stop. This is why nobody wants to build nuclear power plants in the United States. And, you know, Trump wants to pump all that stuff up. I mean, we need to lean into this. I really want to activate young students I think that art is the way. I'm totally delighted that you wrote that play and that you did that thing and could put it at a college. I think that would be a great idea, to be honest.
Thank you. And I have other pieces, too, that I have worked on, that I am working on, that also relate. So here's a request I would like to make of your listeners. And by the way, everybody's free to link with Nuclear Hot Seat as well and to propagate the show that way. If you come to my website and you sign up for in that little yellow box that's there, you get the chapter from what was my ebook, which is turning into my book about what it was like to be on the ground at Three Mile Island. But you also get the show every week in your inbox. I send an email out with that. But what I would like to ask anybody who's hearing this is, if you are connected with a theater company, if you have the ability to assist me in getting my shows into the right hands, they're all propaganda on behalf of sanity. And I mean, the Armageddon show, I'm currently working on to bring it up to speed. A couple of the things were dated in it. But again, it's about taking control of our own lives and changing things through intention. I have a show that I want to put together about Fukushima that would be very low budget, you know, five actors, five stools, blank stage, really cheap to produce.
Have you written it already?
No, but if I have a circumstance that will support me in putting it together, that's one that can come together for a while because I've been collecting my material for a while. I know the format. I know the structure, but it's about having a commitment because right now my weekly commitment is to the show. Beyond that, I have a secondary commitment, which is called making enough money to live on, which I tend to forget about on a regular basis. It's a little scary. And then it is, which project am I working on? So I'm currently in a phase. I just finished working on somebody expressed interest in my Marilyn Monroe play, and I just finished that, which I'm very excited about because that's all about who women are and what defines us. Mm-hmm. It's a two-character play.
I love plays. I think this is delightful. I did not know this about you. This is totally delightful.
I have a 35-year background in writing plays and musicals. I've won awards. I've been produced internationally. I helped to found, and for 20 years, I co-ran a musical theater development organization called Broadway on Sunset here in Los Angeles. I have adjudicated competitions. I mean, I had heavy creds. The problem being that theater is no place to try and make one's living. There's an old saying about theater. You can make a killing, but you can't make a living.
Yeah, no kidding. Right.
Yeah, so, but I really feel there's something about my theatrical self, which has been on hold for about 12 years, suddenly with this Marilyn Monroe play and realizing the intensity of the conversation about femininity and feminism that takes place. I won't go into the details about the play, but it's very intense, and it's actually, for the most part, a comedy with a lot of serious moments in it, and I do go into how she died. Because she has in there. But with that and with the other theatrical projects I have, if somebody says, I'm interested, I have a connection, let's get you connected with a workshop. Let's get you connected with a theater, with the university theater department. Come in, give some lectures. I teach musical theater book writing, and that's the most obscure of the musical theater arts. That's a whole skill set that I did for years. I can help with that. I did writing workshops for incest survivors. That's another skill set I can bring to the table. Take me somewhere where my writing can lead, and let me develop these shows with proper support. I can't do it by myself. This is where I have to work collaboratively with others.
Well, I'm glad that you're on my radio show. We have about 4.5 minutes left. I just wanted to kind of give you the heads up. You've been listening to Lonnie Clark with Libby Halevy. This has actually been a pre-recorded interview. I hope you've enjoyed it. Libby, I hope you'll come back because this whole thing is such a true discovery. And Thomas coming on at the end of the month, or I think early next month. We're going to really discuss this whole idea about why art is so intrinsic into making an effect in affecting a change. We have been talking enough, but one of the things that's been absent in this whole arena in the nuke resistor movement has been art. There's no art around it.
There is, but it's not coordinated. It's not focused.
Right.
And we are lousy with facts. We do not lack for information. What we lack is a persuasive, appealing way to put out a rather bleak vision with a message that you can make it different. And right. That's what art can do. You state the worst of it. You got people emotionally involved and identifying. You get them really there. You get them to a point that they wouldn't have gotten to by themselves, where they kind of sit back in their seats and they go, and then within 3 to 6 minutes, you're out, but with a direction they can go in to turn their own lives around. The purpose of art is to change lives, and it doesn't have to be this huge change. I'll leave you with this one. The definition of a quantum leap. Everybody thinks it's this enormous change that has to take place. But in quantum physics, the definition of a quantum leap is the smallest possible change that can take place that then extrapolates out to a major change. You don't have to move the mountain. All you have to do is put a stone in the shoe.
Yes, exactly.
Ultimately, that will move the mountain.
It is the smallest particle. That's the theory that Deepak Chopra writes about in the 7 Spiritual Laws of Success. It's that it's really at the quantum level. At the quantum level, there's no difference. We're all the same energy. It's all about energy and our intention and our decision. And this is why I insist. I know people think I'm a bit Pollyanna, but I really believe that we need to keep our intentions correct on saving our planet and saving our species. And surviving past this time when there has just been terrible pollution going on with disregard to life on our planet. So, Libby, I really appreciate you being here, man. This has been completely delightful. I hope you'll come back sometime soon because...
Anytime, Lonnie, just ask me. I love talking with you. I think you are doing a phenomenal job with this show. My hat's off to you for being able to do it 5 days a week. I have a hard enough time just doing it once.
Well, five days a week is going to be interesting. I go back to school the week of April 3rd, and I'm taking 2 classes. I've decided I'm going to stick with it instead of just taking 1 class, but... I think I can do it. I really enjoy it because it adds to my life. The knowledge you gave me today, I actually am going to talk to the University Theater about your plays because I think they're very timely and perfect for our culture right now. So do you have any, we have about a minute left. Is there any one last thing you want to tell people how to reach you again?
The website is nuclearhotseat.com. And I have over 200 episodes that are there. Just scroll back through the months and take a look. And it covers all aspects of the nuclear issue that I can come up with. And another site that I do have is on how to take care of your health in dealing with radiation. And that's Radiation Awareness Protection Talk, which is raptawareness.com. And there's a free report there. You can take a look at the information at that site as well.
I'll have a link on here.
And if you want to send me an email, info@nuclearhotseat.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you for listening with us, and I really appreciate your time, Libby. This is Libby Halevy with Nuclear Hot Seat. Put your courage feet on. Lean into it. Our democracy only works if we do. And, you know, please do share our station with your friends and family. Let's help grow the station and get the word out and make this a common thing. Put your courage feet on, you guys. We'll talk to you soon.